Hostelbeck and co-host Reverends Bill Holton and Cher Holton. Discover practical applications to bring 21st century metaphysics to work in your life. Here's your host, Paul Hostelbeck.
Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp 2. This is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hostelbeck at the San Rafael end or side or whatever it is of the virtual kitchen table. Woohoo! In case you don't know, San Rafael is just north of the Golden Gate Bridge and it's beautiful here. And of course, it's another beautiful day in my consciousness. And I'm here with my beautiful friends.
Ah, this is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton, and I'm at the Durham part of this kitchen table. We always envision it round, so I don't know why we say sides.
Yeah, that's what I stumbled on.
But we are at this wonderful table, and it's another beautiful day in my consciousness.
And this is the Reverend Dr. Bill Holton. Very definitely another beautiful, beautiful day in my consciousness at the Durham curve of the table. Glad to be with you all again. And as you know, Cher and I are the co-founders of a very special Unity ministry, an online Unity ministry. And our name is the Unity Center for UniversalProsperity.org. And we spell universal, Y-O-U, universal, because it's about your spiritual growth and human happiness.
Yes, we like to emphasize you. And you can find us at UCFYP.org.
Wow. And I have my website, paulhostelbeck.com, where I have my calendar as well as my weekly blog, The Absolute Word. And so we are going to get romping because that's what we do on Metaphysical Romp 2. And we are on the third and final session based on an article found in Medium. And the article is entitled, You Can't Wait Until Life Isn't Hard Anymore Before You Decide to Be Happy. And Tim Denning is the one who wrote this article. And it's all about an unconventional path to happiness. And if you've been listening to these episodes, we've been also questioning Tim's answers during this process. And I hope in a way it gives you examples of how we look at what we read, how we look into what we read. And so we're on another subsection here, and it's what true happiness feels like, parentheses, in case you've forgotten, end parentheses. And when I read this the first time, I literally laughed out loud. That's pretty funny because I've met people who I now wonder if they've forgotten what happiness feels like. And so Ichiro Kishimi and Fumitaki Koga wrote a popular book called The Courage to Be Disliked. Wow, what a title of a book. They say happiness is the feeling of contribution. When you contribute to a cause bigger than yourself, it helps you come alive. You see humanity as a collective force rather than the competition, or worse, the enemy. And so what I'm thinking about this is that when a person is adding their contribution to a cause bigger than themselves, they get out of that self-reflective, self-demeaning language and stuff that can happen. They get away from staring out their belly button, which is something that used to be said many, many years ago. Okay, how about you guys? You have any thoughts?
Well, I agree with the idea of how important it is to contribute. And I think all of us can just attest to how much we love what we do because we have the opportunity to take our passion and share it with other people. And that puts us into that place of contributing at a higher level. And it really does add to that feeling of happiness. What I would want to just question is it's not the contribution that's created or the other things out there that's creating the happiness. We are generating that feeling of happiness. It's coming from within us.
Yes.
And it's our choice. Happiness is a choice of an emotion we feel rather than something that comes as a result of an outer situation.
And for me too, when you look at contribution, I look more at contributing to the greater good of humankind, not seeing borders between countries, not seeing borders between people, but seeing us all related, if you will. We're all part of Homo sapiens.
Yeah. And Tim shares how this is how he feels when he's writing his blogs or books or whatever. And I think I feel that way too when I'm writing a book. I feel like I'm contributing to something. Yes. And I do derive some happiness from that. But again, it's not the writing itself that is causing the happiness. It's what how I'm deciding to respond. Okay, so shall we scroll down a little further?
You know, and I just want to say one thing really quickly, too, in terms of contributions. Not only, and I know all three of us feel this way, not only are we contributing to the current greater good of folks on the planet, but our particular messages, our three messages, I also gain a lot of happiness by seeing that what we're saying and the concepts we're sharing will contribute to the greater future good of humankind in terms of where we're headed.
Yeah, we never know who's going to listen to these podcasts. We don't know who's going to be reading the books that we've written. And we just let that go, don't we? Because yep. we can't control it, that's for sure. Okay, so he says, seek out contribution. Oh, Shares, you want to say something?
Well, I was going to bring up one other thing, if it doesn't take too much time. Just his sentence here where he says, you see humanity as a collective force rather than the competition or worse, the enemy. And that brought up in my mind a reminder of Brené Brown's wonderful book, Atlas of the Heart. And she talks about, I'm going to ask Bill, the motive?
The motive attribution asymmetry.
Yeah. And it's where you begin to see anybody who disagrees with you as an enemy and evil. And I think that this feeling of contribution, it's important. I think this goes back to something Bill said. What are we contributing to? Because there are people who contribute to things like emotive attribution, asymmetry, consciousness. And we want to be sure we are bringing the happiness of contributing to the higher good.
I think that's a good point to bring up. And I hadn't remembered it from the book. Okay, so where shall we go next?
So maybe the pro tip?
Yeah, and you know, as I'm looking at this pro tip, I'm having one of those deja vu moments. I'm thinking that we might have actually explored this at the very end of the last episode. And so what we're doing here is actually saying a lot more about this one. So his pro tip is, help those less fortunate than you. Well, that's a good idea. The bonus is those same people will help you see how much you already have, which will increase happiness because your problems aren't as bad as those truly struggling. And I just have discomfort around this because this is saying I'm going to feel better because you're in a worse situation than I am. And wow, that is not a good place to start from.
No, I agree with you. And it also kind of disses your own experience, because if I'm struggling with something, sure, there's somebody in worse shape and there's somebody in better shape, but I'm in this shape and I'm going through it. So I don't want to diminish the experience that I'm having and the impact. I mean, I get to choose how I respond to it, but it is mine to experience. And sometimes that just is not a really good, accurate action to take.
And I think simply celebrating what we already have without having these other people around us is a much cleaner, purer way of generating happiness.
Now, gratitude, the practice of gratitude is such a powerful one. And in any moment when you're feeling less than what you want to feel, if you can pause and just move into gratitude, it's almost one of those things that fills you up to the point that everything else is gone. All you have is the gratitude feeling and you lose that what you were dealing with.
And our happiness comes not so much in terms of what may happen to us, but our response ableness, after what happens to us. It's how we respond to it, how responsible we are for seeing our own greater good.
Yes. Yeah, so I think we're dancing around the idea, unconditional happiness, a happiness that isn't conditioned based upon something outside happening. Now, look, if you choose to be happy because something outside you feel great joy about, that's wonderful. But getting to a point where the happiness is not dependent on anything else, it kind of lines up with unconditional love, where unconditional love is a natural rising within us of love without the need for an object or a reason.
Yeah.
And I think the happiness psychology studies that have been done, I don't know if Martin Seligman was one of the ones who did this, but they looked at the different levels of happiness. And yes, if you suddenly get an inheritance and receive $10,000 or $100,000 or whatever, there is that happiness that comes from that, or you win a game, you're happy. And there is that kind of happiness. And then there's that deeper happiness that's just, like you said, the unconditional happiness. It's a choice of attitude. It's an attitude, not an event.
Yeah. And I was just thinking about this as you were talking and so agreeing with you, Cher, is that if it's a happiness without reason, is it an unreasonable happiness?
That's fun. Play with that.
Yeah, play with that one for a moment. Okay, so if you want to be happy, do this, is the next subsection. Internet entrepreneur Jason Calacanis says, if you want to be happy, then find something to pour your heart and soul into, which is very much like the previous subsection, isn't it?
Really passion, what you're passionate, find something you're passionate about.
Yeah, so isn't the word today what my why is? When someone says, ask what your why is, it's usually around a passion. Yeah. Then he goes a step further. He says, happiness is nothing more than a collection of memories. They go by so fast that they're easy to miss. If you want to be happier, then create more memories. Well, I would say that's partially true, because this then is a happiness based on a reason to be happy rather than entering into what now I'm not now calling unreasonable.
Mm-hmm. And for me, there's a lot of now moment happiness. And if it's in a now moment, it's not a memory, it's a current experience. And there's happiness there too.
Yeah. And that's because we have embedded in our culture, in a way, a lot of teachers speak. They speak as if the past is a real thing existing in the present. And all we have of the past are our memories, our present memories about the past. Similarly, we can never be in the future, but we can have present thoughts and feelings about the future in the present.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And not everybody has happy memories. And so it just saying, you know, if you want to be happier, then create more memories. You really want to look at the quality of the memories you are creating, which comes back to the choices that you're making in this now moment, because what we do now become our future memories.
Yeah. And his last statement on this is chase moments that will produce nostalgia. And I immediately went back to, I visited and spoke at the church in Wimberley, Texas, a few weeks ago. And when I walked in, I was filled with nostalgia. I didn't cause it. I didn't even think about it. But being there brought back a present experience from something that happened in my past. And I was filled with nostalgia. And that is such a very good feeling.
Nice.
Okay, you want to take the next one, Cher?
Sure. He says three questions will determine 80% of your happiness. So is everybody ready to get three questions that are going to determine 80% of your happiness. These come from Mark Manson, and they're controversial. He'll admit that, but let's just see what we think. Three questions. Number one, how much did you sleep? Number two, how well did you eat? And number three, who did you surround yourself with?
Well, I don't know about you guys. I can resonate with these. If I haven't slept well, it can seem more difficult to self-generate that happiness.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think it affects how you see everything. Everything is affected and distorted.
Yeah. It kind of creates like a fog or a lens, doesn't it?
And for me, I've kind of notched this up a little bit. How much and how long have you sleepwalked through life?
Oh, that's a waking experience, isn't it?
You're right.
A lot of people just sleepwalk through life. Yes.
Immediately, I think of dogma, scientific dogma, religious dogma, education, any kind of a dogma. If you're stuck in dogma, in my opinion, you're sleepwalking through life.
Yeah, because everything's on automatic, isn't it?
Yeah, and you're not questioning anything. And so you're really not growing or learning. You're just having the same experience over and over and over. It's kind of like Groundhog's Day.
right. Well, and so I would tweak this question because I have slept a lot of hours, but I didn't sleep well sometimes. And that's just as bad. So I would say, how much and how well did you sleep?
Oh. Good tweet. Very good. And I definitely relate to the second one, how well did you eat? Because everybody who knows me and goes on any kind of traveling trips with me, they know that when Cher says, I'm hungry, we stop and eat. We find a place to eat immediately. Because boy, when I get hungry and I can't eat, my personality changes. And I know that about myself.
So do you get hangry is what they talk about?
Yeah, I get very hangry. I do. I get very impatient. I turn a little mean.
Boy, and that is really difficult to understand about you. But we have traveled, and I remember you saying, I'm hungry. It's time to stop. And Bill just stopped. He knows.
Yep. He knows. Anybody who travels with me knows it's almost funny that I always carry snacks now with me. I don't know if it's a change in body chemistry or what it is, but there is definitely when I'm hungry, and I don't mean just like it's getting close to dinner time. I mean, when I'm hungry, I don't want to go past a certain point.
I also want to add to sort of reword this question. Are you only eating conventional knowledge or non-traditional knowledge?
He's taking it meta-spiritually again.
There we go. A meta-spiritual viewpoint. And I can relate to what you're saying, Cher, because if I don't eat well and eat regularly, it's pretty easy for me to get hangry.
Yeah. Very easy. I guess we get hangry, spiritually hangry when we're not when we're only eating fundamentally instead of exploring.
Yes. Instead of questioning those unquestioned answers, right?
And of course, we need to wrap up, but the who did you surround yourself with is just critical as a final thought that how important it is to make sure you're putting yourself at a place where you're with people who support and value you.
Yeah, so that can be so important, but sometimes we don't have a choice. And so this is why that self-responsibility is so important. There's no one, no thing, no person that makes us feel or think anything. And if we can remember that on an ongoing basis, we can escape that trap. Okay, shall we switch to the absolute word?
Yes, and you want to, just his final statement as a summary. Happiness is really just about four things: perceived control, perceived progress, connectedness, the number and depth of your relationships, and vision and meaning, being part of something bigger than yourself.
Wow, and that thing about control. Knowing what you can control and what you can't control is really, really important.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, so there's what you can control, what you can't control, and what you can influence. We can influence others, but I can't control what you do with it.
Definitely.
Bottom line. Okay, so this absolute word comes from June 4th, 2023. And of course, the absolute word is based on Sunday messages appearing in Daily Word, a copyrighted Unity publication, and has been used with permission. And so for June 4th, we have release. I release. I am in the flow of life. We use the power of elimination to release, let go, and renounce. All living things release in one way or another. Without release, there is no life. Just as I would not fill my closet with clothes that no longer fit, I do not fill my life with beliefs and ideas that no longer reflect who I am and who I'm becoming. Releasing is also a powerful way to live my faith. I trust I am moving in the right direction. I release items from my past with ease, grace, and gratitude. Release creates space in my life for new things. It is my way of remaining open to possibility, welcoming new opportunities, and keeping myself in the flow of life. Release is an important aspect of my spiritual practice. I release. I am in the flow of life. And so it is. And this is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck signing off, saying thank you for listening. And the three of us appreciate your listening to us.
Thank you. And this is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton saying it has been a pleasure and thank you for listening.
And this is the Reverend Dr. Bill Holton, and the three of us invite you to repeat often during the day, I am in the flow of life because I've released what I need to release.